The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. You're joining Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
And Ray Haupt.
Our guest Ray Haupt is in the studio. How fun is that?
Wow.
We don't have to say, can you hear us?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Are you on a cell phone?
Oh, we lost him. His connection's bad.
Let me find the mute button.
I know. We should probably just make crackling noises just so people don't,
in the background?
Don't feel confused. No, it's fun. It's fun when you're actually here. So we're talking about fire today, and tons of information on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. And this show actually airs live Sundays from noon to 2. It airs recorded in Philadelphia, and that's on the West Coast. And on the East Coast, Mondays from 1 to 3 in Philadelphia and New Jersey. All that information's on here. So if you'd like to talk to us about guests, topics, sponsoring, all that jazz, our phone numbers, emails, everything, wethepeopleradio.us. It's all there for you. So, okay. Today, we're talking about fire, and for those of you who live in a city or who live in an area that doesn't deal with giant wildland fires, you're paying for it, for starters. Your public land is burning up, your national parks and all that stuff. You know, you're going to wind up with nothing at the rate we're going. And wood products, cost is going to go skyrocketing. It is a renewable resource that we're completely wasting, and the rest of us are having to breathe it in, which we're not excited about.
Yeah, that's one thing.
So that's
I've never
why this is
understood.
An everybody topic.
Yeah, the policy of not harvesting timber on Forest Service ground that's been burned. I mean, when are they going to change that?
It's not their policy. The Forest Service up in the Klamath tried. They've tried for a year.
Well, who's shutting that down?
Da, 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 da. The environmentalists.
Yeah, that's
they
insane.
They sue them because they think that the...
Or even the threat of suit, you know, draws the process.
I mean, the millions and millions of dollars that just go to waste, and they cry because they don't have any money, and they can't shut those guys down. They could start shutting them down by stop paying them to sue them. I know that would be...
Yeah, Equal Access to Justice Act. We did that in the last show with you.
Yeah.
Get rid of that.
Yeah.
A totally different deal. But, the cost. Talk to us about how much this costs us, because that's really everybody's problem.
Sure, and last time I was on with you, we had in the chat room people were wanting to know about, the fire industrial machine and all that kind of stuff. Well, there is big business around fighting fires. Everybody knows. If you've ever been around a big fire, you see lots of expensive equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Costs a lot of money to move crews around, train them.
Some of the equipment isn't even used. It's paid by the day to sit there.
Right. That's right, because in fire, it's just like a fire station. You may have a fire going on someplace, but you still have equipment sitting around just in case.
Yeah, you can't deploy everything.
No.
You've got some reserve. Yeah.
The Forest Service doesn't own enough water trucks or bulldozers or anything, so they bring private equipment in to have it available, whether they use it or not.
Yeah.
And so
I don't really have a problem with that, though.
I would rather have private
industry support and maintain that equipment than have the government do it.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I think the government should own it all. However, for people who don't see this, they need to know how much it's not just, okay, we need an engine and let's run it out there. It could be hours away. So they've got to have it on site.
Sure.
And so I was talking to someone who said like 50% of the Forest Service budget now goes to fire. It's like 50%.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be managing our public lands.
Yeah, and every year.
But instead, they're managing them burning up.
And every year, Congress appropriates money to manage the land. And every year, this time of the year, in the last quarter of the fiscal year, the agencies can't go back to Congress for more money. Well, they can, but they're usually not successful in the last quarter of the fiscal. And as a result, the Office of Management and Budget makes them balance their budget. And to do so, they start taking all the money from all the other programs, the service programs that everybody enjoys, the camping, the fishing, the wildlife viewing, and even the prescribed fires and the fire fuels work.
Sure.
Taking all that to pour into the suppression effort to make it through to October 1st. And that's happened with regularity the last 10, 15 years.
See, and that's and up here in places that used to have logging and timber harvesting, that was an enterprise thing, put people to work, created lumber, all the different things that happened, and now that's been converted into a fire industry.
And if you think about it, how did we get here? Well, we got here with a mindset that was able to absorb that in the budget years ago. But where we are today is that formula that was put together back in the 60s or 70s for the percent of budget that had to be set aside for fire is no longer valid because our conditions have changed.
Yeah. We've loaded it all up, and now we're either going to fix that quickly or burn it. Yeah. But I don't think we could fix it fast enough to turn that corner, even if we could.
And you have to understand how all this works. You know, it's not that the Forest Service has some kind of plan that they enact, although they do have plans that they enact. That's not what I'm talking about. There's an entire national structure around emergencies. And it's managed out of Boise, Idaho, at the National Incident Command Center. And in that center, there's representatives from the military, all of the states, all of the federal agencies, and many of the state agencies as well. And they twice a day brief on what's going on nationally that may affect emergency resources, and they allocate and move things around. So your volunteer fire departments, your Office of Emergency Services engines, your CAL FIRE, your Oregon Department of Forestry, all of them are part of this mix of a giant chess game that's going on nationally.
And the big eye in the sky sits in Boise and kind of watches that.
That's right.
Interesting. Okay, hold that thought because we have Billy Bob on the line who has a question or a comment for us. We don't want to leave him stranded in there forever. Hey, how's it going?
I'm caught in the smoke. What do you guys
calling me?
We're here.
Yeah. Hey, great show as usual, Aaron. I bought 2 years ago. I was up running bulldozer on the Bagley Fire up out of Big Bend up there. Steep, I mean, unbelievably steep ground.
Horribly rough ground.
Oh, my God. I mean, straight off, you could have rolled a donut clear to the river. So anyway, and then last year I was out there at that Ono or whatever it's called out there, and I watched more waste of money with CAL FIRE. I mean, up at the Bagley Fire, there was all these steep hills, and so when it burns over, it loosens all the humus underneath the rocks and stuff, so you get rock slides.
Yikes.
And there was this one section of road, probably 150 feet anyway, maybe 200 feet of rock slide, and they were burning hot rocks, probably 4 to 6 inch rock, little stuff, not any big ones, but they were smoking hot, right? And they had these six CAL FIRE pumpers come up the road. And they first got out, and they had their shovels, and there was six guys in each rig, and six of them, so that's 36 guys, and they started to clear the rocks, and then the superintendent said, jump back in, so everybody put their tools away, jump back in, and these six CAL FIRE brand new tires ran over the hot, burning rock. I stood there, and I just could not believe it. Brand new rubber on those rigs, and they burn, drive over burning rocks. It would have taken them 15 minutes to clear that road, but no, that's too much work. So anyway, I've watched more money being wasted up on these fires, so don't tell me about the inadequacy of the state of California. All right, let you guys go. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
That was an interesting twist, because I usually get the opposite in my area.
It's usually CAL FIRE is the hero,
Forest Service is thrown under the bus.
Oh, yeah, I hear a lot of CAL FIRE stories.
Well, you know, and everybody means well, and let's face it. You know, at the end of the day, when the place is burning up, it's not like we ever want to, you know, bash our firemen because it's a hard job.
Well, you know, we were talking about the incident response piece.
Yeah.
And the incident command system is a paramilitary design. There's an incident commander, and that's what the incident commander is, directs all the operations. There's logistics that does the groundwork and the moving the troops around and getting things ready. There's a planning department that plans the attack for the next day. There's operations that's carrying it out. There's an air branch that's doing the Air Force piece. So the listeners out there, how many of you would point to a military operation and say, boy, I got 100% efficiency there in everything I see.
Exactly. Right.
Well, too, you have to realize that there are probably a lot of other circumstances involved in these incidents that the public's not aware of.
Sure.
And
clear the rocks, dump stuff, drive them over.
Yeah, you don't really know all the details and all the facts, you know, but it is awful easy to jump to conclusions.
Well, and my point in all of this is
that it's all being run by humans.
That because of the lack of management, that can, scientifically is proven, can reduce the severity of fire, reduce the amount or the duration of these fires and the expenditures. By the American taxpayer not paying for it, by the way, because that it's paid for by the profit off of whatever harvest is done on those public lands. What the American public has chosen to do is say, no, we're going to invest it on the back end, you know, in the response.
We're just going to pay for fire.
Which is the most inefficient end with the highest impact.
And then you could literally salvage the budget with the salvage.
Yeah.
If, in fact, you
but
could
we've
harvest
chosen not
that,
to do
but
that
we don't do
as
that
well,
either.
Yeah. And we're not reforesting. So what we've done, you know, I've told many people this, you know, oh, you just want to cut timber. Well, okay, I'm a forester, but, I don't cut it with reckless abandon. You're right. I do want my industry to survive. I do want my industry to be healthy because I know that if my support structure goes down, so does the ability to stop what we're seeing on this landscape. There's no place to take it. When we had the fires in Southern California about 6-7 years ago, guess what they did with all the stuff around Lake Arrowhead? They hauled it out to the desert and burned it because there was no place to take that old growth timber that burned up there around Lake Arrowhead.
Oh, they had already closed
Arrowhead.
All the mills.
That's right. They strangled all the mills
that's
out
right.
of business.
And they hauled it out to Bishop and burned it.
Yeah.
Super.
You know, yeah.
So all these people who would drive 5 miles to recycle a can are the same guys who...
Yeah.
You know, we'll burn up tons and tons and tons of timber. And it is a huge industry. You have to have it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old...
Why are we making it a primary industry?
Old enough like me to remember the old Quaker State commercial that was pay me now or pay me later.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, do an oil change today versus saving an engine job.
Mm-hmm.
Same concept.
It is the exact same concept.
And you can't... what you said earlier was so spot on. You can't have 100% efficiency when you're in crisis mode.
No, and then add government to it.
And then, yeah, exactly. Yeah, crisis mode in
and
the government
the, and
is
the problem solver is the
people's
government.
Disaster.
Now, I'll tell you, you know, all of this thing going on, too, a gentleman called in and said it's all, you know, resources sitting around or whatever. Okay, but what's going on behind the scenes as well is there are geographic area commands that are report to the National Command Center. There's one right here in Reading that controls all troop movements basically in the North State from all the agencies and everything, all the flying parts and bulldozers
and
everything.
And then they set up like the tents and stuff out on
the... Well, yeah, but what they're doing too is even though you may see that piece of equipment sitting there, it may be held there by the Reading office in case another something starts over in a particular other place where there's what we call drawdown, where all of the engines are already engaged in something else. So there has to be a backup. So that's you're seeing that as well. And that's the public doesn't understand that piece.
No, but when you see things that are silly, like, I mean, I remember last year in the fire, there were big cases of water and things like that that were all dumped in the landfill.
Yeah.
And people just freaked out.
So, yeah.
Which they should have.
Sure.
Freaked out.
That's waste.
But the bad part is there's not always a mechanism for that. You know, they're there to... They only have one gear forward.
Yeah.
There's no reverse.
No.
So when they go to take it apart, there's no way to do that efficiently.
And it's illegal to give that to the public.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the part that we found out about was you can't give that away. It has to be destroyed.
No, Congress has forbidden that.
Yeah.
So it has to be trucked all the way back to where it came from. And hopefully you can get it there at a cost less than what you bought it for.
See, and there's stuff like that that just has to get fixed if we ever get to get over these gigantic things that we need. Those are the things that we need to get to.
Sure.
But it just I challenge
anybody that's ever been in business. If you've ever been in business, you have employees working for you. How many of you can guarantee me that you get 100% of performance out of every one of them?
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, we're human.
Yeah.
That's right.
Darn humans. Can't live with them. Can't live without them. Alrighty, we need to take a really fast break here. Yeah. Because it's going like wildfire today. Talking about fire and the show's just burning by.
Yeah.
That's all I can think of are fire things. All right, wethepeopleradio.us. Find us online. Send us emails. Give us ideas, etc.
So many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much of love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I love you, love.
Was a given. And we had my Give a Damn's Busted special request for Billy Bob. Just seemed to fit. I always play songs for the callers. So, all right, you're back with We the People Radio. We're talking to Ray Haupt this morning. We chatted with him about the July, let's see, we talked to him on July the 12th, actually, and that program is linked up. We did a lot of precursor to this, and then we realized we didn't have time to do fire. And today we don't have time to do fire because it's going too fast.
Fire is the result of the July 12th.
Exactly. That's the
topic.
Yeah, if you don't take care of your resources, you burn them all up.
Yeah.
So what's the cost per day?
You know, we talked about the incident command system a little bit. And incident command teams, if you will, start at ICT-1, which is a type 1 team, which is basically can handle about anything.
So that's the big one.
That's the big team.
Okay.
That's the big team. It's a national team. The highest qualifications for every member on that team, they're composed of about 55 people. Different areas, you know, their notoriety. They manage the logistical work for at 9/11 at both New York, at the Trade Center, and the logistical work at the Pentagon recovery after 9/11.
Interesting. And so, are they? How many of them are there?
In California, we have five right now, but
they could go anywhere.
They can go anywhere. And nationally, I don't know right now. I'd have to look at the.
And I guess I'm curious: do they live all over the place, or are these 55 people who live? Like, do they all meet at the incident?
Yes.
But the rest of the time, they just live all dispersed.
They're on rotation.
Okay.
And they're on 14 days on, 2 days off if they're on assignment.
Hmm.
They can be extended to 21 days. When they do come off, they're mandatory down for 2 days, and then they come back on call. And when they're up for rotation, which means they're the next team to take an incident, they have a minimum hour callback, so to speak. So they have to be either near an airport or
I see what you're saying.
Ready to turn the key in the ignition when they get the call. And their response time is about 24 hours to get to wherever it is they're going. Now, people think when they see a Type 1 team on a Forest Service incident, it's Forest Service. Forest Service doesn't have all Type 1 teams anymore.
They don't?
No. The bulk of the teams are what we used to call rainbow teams.
And now that's bad.
Yeah, I know.
Or good, I guess, depending on where
you're at. But what it is it's a collection of agency experts, some of them retired, some of them working for another business or something like that, and what they do is they still fight fire. They may have started in the Forest Service, may have started BLM, even local fire departments. And they work through the ICS qualification system, and there's a certification for every level, for every position on that team. And you get to be an ICT-1. That's pretty heavy stuff. You don't get there without probably 20, 30 years of extensive firefighting response.
Interesting. So they're almost always dealing with a fire on land that maybe they don't know.
Correct.
In an area that is
why don't they use local people? Well, you know what? On the district I worked on, I have 250 people working there, and no one qualified at the Type 1 level.
Just moving around that much resource,
but you don't have that expertise in one place.
Yeah, that's a tricky deal.
Yeah, you may have had some of the lower graded positions, but certainly not a command position on that local unit.
Yeah, you had put on your list of things today that the differences in jurisdictions of fire agency. I think we kind of did that.
The only thing we didn't talk about is I mentioned unified command, and that's when a fire may cross a boundary from one jurisdiction to another. When you look at the state of California, there's a statewide memorandum of understanding between the federal agencies and the state.
Oh.
And what that does is it defines who has initial attack responsibility. Initial attack is first call comes into 911. There's a response. Who responds? So it goes like Yreka, it goes through the Yreka Interagency Command Center there, and then it's triaged out to where it is on the landscape. If it's within the jurisdiction or the boundary driven by surrounded by CAL FIRE, CAL FIRE is the primary.
What if it's first? Yellowstone.
Same sort of thing. Yellowstone, it would be the Park Service.
Okay.
You know, if it's on National Forest, there's some National Forest that's actually CAL FIRE protected.
Interesting.
They're usually urban interface areas.
So people live there.
Yeah. And there are
I'm the translator.
Other things at risk. Sorry. Other things at risk. So you have lightning fire comes through and it's on public land, Forest Service. Guess
sure.
what? Forest Service gets the first call. And then CAL FIRE comes in as the backup. When you go into a command structure triggering a team, which is by definition you've escaped initial attack, in other words, you can't contain it. With the resources on hand, and you have to go to a different command structure to be able to get at this thing.
Because they think it's going to get big, or does it have to get big first?
It already kind of got big. Okay. Or it looks like it's going there.
Okay.
And they know, they can pretty much tell by the terrain and the size of what's going to happen in the next
movement
hour.
Movement of the fire, things that are at risk. You're 24 hours into fighting this fire, and you got nothing left to throw at it, and everybody's falling out. They need some rest.
Right.
You know, that kind of a thing.
Well, that's the thing with these fires today is they, from the time they start, 20 minutes into it, they burn so fast and move so quick. I was up south of here. A fire started up above Oroville a couple of weeks ago, and I was driving down highway, I guess that would be 99, and I saw a little wisp of smoke coming out of the tree line.
Mm-hmm.
It was up, 2,000-3,000 feet,
mm-hmm.
and I knew right then, that's not supposed to be there. And within about 10 minutes, it looked like an A-bomb.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how fast it moved.
Yeah, and that's a condition of the continuing drought.
Right.
Know. Yeah. But like I say, if you have multiple jurisdictions involved, and you also have volunteer fire departments and city departments in this too, where they have defined geographic
sure.
areas. And when you get multiples involved, then you're escalating your team type, so to speak.
Right, because you have to have somebody who can
yeah.
deploy all of that resource.
Fire going across state line has to be a Type 1 team because they're the only ones that operate in interstate.
Interesting.
You drop down to a Type 2, lower complexity. The team's about 40 individuals instead of 55. But the rule of thumb, when I retired 5 years ago, Type 1 team will run you in the neighborhood of $1 million a day. They can push $2 million a day.
And does that take into account like all the water trucks and
everything.
The this and the that and the other?
Yeah, that's everything.
$1 million a day?
$1 million a day.
So for all those people who, you know, you're still getting, you know, you live someplace, say in the east, our friends in Philadelphia and New mm-hmm. Jersey and stuff, and they're hearing, fire's still burning in California. It's a little blip on the news.
Yeah.
Boom, you just burned $1 million.
Yeah.
God, that's just
again
amazing.
Or you just burn $50 million, depending on how far right. into
yeah.
this thing you are. Yeah, type 2 team,
oh
half
gosh.
$1 million a day, and then downward from there. And those are rough averages. You know, a type 1 team rarely is going to be at a $500,000 a day.
Because you wouldn't have a type 1 team if it wasn't
yeah.
a huge
if
incident.
If it wasn't a big event with a
yeah.
lot of complexity and a lot of structures and people at risk and those kind of things. Yeah.
Interesting. And so you had put in there, on our list, is there a public role, current law and community protection planning, like fire safe councils and
definitely.
All that?
Yeah, definitely.
So where does that all fit?
Well, there's...
obviously fits before the
yeah,
fire,
well,
right?
And during.
Really?
Yeah. Before the fire, certainly in working with the local agency to do fuels projects and those kinds of things that... You know, I used to describe them as I wanted to paint a picture on a landscape that no one could ignore when the fire team gets here so that they didn't have options.
Right.
Because it's the options that,
right.
you know, that somebody from afar comes in that either makes a mistake on or makes a real mess out of sometimes.
Right.
So, you know, that's where you work with your agency in doing that work. And then, of course, the protection around your home as well needs to be done before. Now, I can tell you, countless times I've been on fires where the bulk of the firefighting was done taking care of work that the homeowner should have done. And so what does that do? Everybody gripes they're not putting the fire out. Well, why aren't they? Because they're doing the work you should have done before they got there.
They're running mm-hmm. around your property
That's right.
trying to cut down stuff.
That's right.
Well, and they're not doing it like an arborist either. I mean, it's like...
No.
No, it's yeah. a massive
That's right.
removal at that point.
That's right. But the point is there are only so many hands you can put on a fire. Mm-hmm. And you'd be better off putting them at productive use rather than doing things that you're neglecting doing yourself.
Mm-hmm. But they also say, you know, they used to say protect your, you know, keep it clear 30 feet from your house or 30 feet from your property line or whatever. Now they're saying 100 feet, but if
yeah.
you've ever been around those fires, 100 feet is nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
When a fire goes through, I mean, I saw a fire jump 299 in about 3 seconds, and that's
yeah.
several hundred feet across, and it
so,
went across that like nothing.
And everybody asks me this question. I got asked constantly last year, how much is enough? How much is enough? I said, well, you know, part of that is what do you feel comfortable with? But the other is, I say, when I drive through my neighborhood, I want my house to be the one that has the welcome mat out and the big neon sign saying, this is the place for your crew to be.
To park. You're not going to get
that's
burned
right.
up here.
That's
yeah,
right.
That's a great point.
That's right.
That
we've got lots
point.
Of open room here.
Yes.
Park your engines right,
that's
right. here.
Yeah. And,
well.
Yeah. So, and then during the fire itself, you know, the big complaint, too, is they don't know where things are. That and the other thing. Well, the fire safe councils have a liaison, a community liaison program. And part of that program is to stay in touch with the operations side of the command structure that comes in to brief them on local things of importance.
Which roads are open,
which
are
roads
under
are
construction,
important. Which water
which
can
closed.
Which water can you use?
There
how
you
do
go.
You get to the water? You know?
Yeah.
All those things. Who's elderly can't get out of their house? Who's mobile, who's not, who's likely not to go and be belligerent. Those kinds of things are really
yeah.
important to the team.
And we hit that 20-minute
break again?
That 20-minute weird pause where no one says anything.
Oh.
We do have to take a really quick break. And, fire response technology and escalating costs. I just saw that was our last thing, but we've been hitting that right straight along, and it is escalating.
Yes.
In a grisly way. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
I fell into a catching on fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. Went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burned, burned, burned. The ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Love the ring of fire. Just the song, not the real ring of fire. All right, so last 20 minutes or so, what have we? Well, I should draw people's attention to the site, WeThePeopleRadio.us, and we've got like six different questions I think on here that you answered for the local newspaper up in your area. Things like, have decades of fire suppression on forest lands contributed to a greater risk of catastrophic fire? That was one that has a very long answer. With that in mind, how does fire play a role in forest health? What kinds of fuel treatment would alleviate issues of overcrowded forest? And it kind of goes into all these things, and you did really comprehensive answers. Yeah, you're never stingy with your answers.
Yeah,
you?
The paper didn't print any of it. So.
Well, see, now they can read it. But really, the answers are really good. Looking at the current state of forests, what statements would you make about how we move forward? So it's not all just life sucks and then you die. I mean, yeah. There's like some nice ideas on where we can go.
There's some hope if you educate yourself and do smart things.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, you know, I guess for some people they'd be thinking, well, this is kind of a West Coast issue. This is a rural land issue. No, it's everybody's issue. It's mm-hmm. costing every taxpayer a ton of money.
Yeah.
Your public lands are not being managed because the budget is going to fight fire. You're going to have a serious lack of wood product in the future, which means costs are going to go way up. You're paying for the rural areas that aren't being able to support themselves. So you have counties that are 70% public land. They used to harvest timber, and that would pay for the schools and whatnot because you didn't have taxes.
And that's how the government set the system up for rural counties to replace their tax base because there's so much public land.
But now they have to pay, what is it, Secure Rural Schools, which is...
Yeah,
I mean, winds up being what the legislature sometimes considers as like rural county welfare.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the, and that's pretty much a welfare payment, basically, that doesn't have a kind of a trickle-down effect in the economy. The difference between that is you spend $1 for Secure Rural Schools funding and you pay some bills, you may get $2 for one spent. In the timber industry, you get between 5 and 15 for every dollar invested.
Sure, because you had people that worked.
That's right.
That created and had jobs and were productive.
And then you have people that support that industry as well.
Well, then you also have other, it's like a mushroom cloud, because all those communities now where you've put people out of work, you're not using a renewable resource, you're not creating paper product, timber product, other wood product, so it's not funneling into your schools. You have people that aren't working, so you have higher incidence of alcoholism, drug abuse, child abuse, divorce, all those social ills that come with it. Well, the public pays for that, too.
Sure.
So you have all these things that are impacted by this across the country. And if all of the people, if you just look at Congress and you look at the number of members of Congress that represent rural areas, if those guys all voted to change this, it would never happen.
No, nope, it's not enough.
Because there aren't enough of them. You need the folks who live in the city to talk to their legislators about this. You have to care about this.
Well, you know, some food for thought, too, is that annually the federal agencies have to do a calculation of carbon emissions associated with forest fires and other activities on the public lands. And it's not widely publicized, but in 2006... last one that I was involved with, which was a rather significant event here in the North State, Redding North, where we had, 22,000 lightning strikes in 48 hours or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that.
The calculation for that year's carbon emissions was equal to 3.5 years' worth of the full emissions for every auto in California.
Yeah. And that was a question in the chat room. What kind of they calculated the CO2 emissions from forest fires?
I mean, if you want to look at the green side of this from the carbon and climate change discussion, we are doing exactly the opposite of what we should be doing with forests by burning them up. If we highly managed them, we would sequester far more carbon. And for the first time last year, I read a national article that declared the public lands to be a net carbon loss for the first time ever. to the environment.
How much of our country is in public land? Do you know?
I don't know offhand. You know, our county's 63%. There are counties on the East Coast, actually, one I worked on in Florida that was 97.
97%
public land?
Public land, yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, there are blocks on the East Coast, but they're fairly rare. And, you know, this whole thing with this, what I worry about, and I didn't bring this up, and that's why I wanted to make sure we work this in, was that everybody's gets all wrapped around this current fire thing. Well, I worry about my children, my grandchildren, and their children from the standpoint that when we don't reforest these areas, they're yep. forever fallow. And we've just taken large chunks of land, like 250,000 acres of a national forest in last year fire. We're not going to reforest it. It's not going to be productive. It's not going to have the recreational amenities that people
enjoy. That's a controversial position, because they claim that it will naturally reforest.
Well, it will, but who's going to live to see it?
Exactly.
If it wasn't a catastrophic yeah. fire that sterilized everything in the ground.
Yeah, I know that I can have something that looks like a forest. We may argue whether or not it functions as a forest from a total ecosystem standpoint. In 50 years, I can do that with regeneration and management. It's going to take Mother Nature 300 years to do that. And I'm not making this up. This is in the science.
Right. But, you know, and the other thing to consider is in that 300-year period, especially at the front end now, mm-hmm. think about it. If we actually got the kind of rain we need,
yeah.
I'm sorry, where does all the soil go? To the bottom.
In the ocean.
Into the rivers.
The other thing to consider, too, there's something in fire science called fire residency. Or fire, and what it is that residency may not be the term, but it's when you burn something from forest to something that's equivalent to starting over with grass and brush, you establish a system that may have more frequent recurring fire on it until it finally climbs its way out of that. Because you seriously altered the ecosystem there, both in the microclimate associated with that particular site to be able to grow trees to begin with, and then you're setting it up to periodic fire in the future. I worry more without the salvage work and the reforestation on close to where I live about the fire that will occur in 20 years than I do about a little bit of reforestation work to happen right now. And the main reason I do is because when that starts to fall over in the brush, it's inoperable. So then you have to drop back and do remote firefighting, which is the highest expense of the least amount of effectiveness. And you end up burning towns that way. It's just an unconscionable thought in my mind, knowing what I know.
That's not management. It's not planning.
It isn't well thought out.
And it's no science. There's no science.
It's just crazy theory.
Just absolute foolishness.
Yeah.
And that's being advocated. I mean, you said you were out on the burn with mm-hmm. a bunch of environmental guys,
yeah,
and they thought that was just wonderful.
They got their heads around it. That, you know, this is just gorgeous. Well, you know, I think that was politics. That wasn't any kind of reasoned thought associated with it. And I don't believe the general city dweller or the general occasional person who visits the forest understand that extreme perspective that's driving public land management policy.
No, and it's really easy to think, well, we've cut everything. You know, you see these things, yeah. You know, we don't have any more trees.
Yeah.
Please, for God's sake, we have the technology. Get on Google Earth.
Yeah.
If you
yeah.
think that we've clear-cut the world, get yeah. on yeah. Google Earth and just do a little flyover of the West yeah. Coast. We have got trees to burn, as they
you know,
say.
Truthfully, you want to see our impacts as a society in America associated with timber? Go look at Canada. You know, Canada does not have the regulation that we do here that protect and regrow our forests. And guess where we get our wood?
Mm-hmm. Canada.
You know, is that responsible from a global perspective? I don't think so.
No.
No, well, and it's not necessary. It's a renewable resource.
Right. if we quit burning it up.
If we just quit wasting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, if we did that with, you know, if we made tons and tons of paper and then we took all those reams of paper out and we had an agency that piled them up in their parking lot and burned them up, people would go crazy. You know, that's wasting.
Yeah.
They want them to recycle the paper at the copy machine.
Yeah.
And yet, I mean, how many trees?
I remind you, that's a wood product too, by the way.
Well, that's what I'm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they're busy recycling, you know, copy paper. Oh, you see at the bottom of these emails that I always print them when it says, "Please be kind to the environment and do not print this email." I'm like, I'm going to print five of those and then I'm going to throw them away. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Because we're burning it up at a rate you can't even fathom how much paper it is. One more quick break. Dang, we're the breakingest group. It's the same number as normal, but it just seems like a lot today.
I think the enviros are still convinced that computers are going to save us paper.
Yeah, that's worked out well.
Yeah.
Government level, I know that's been a tremendous success. We'll be right back. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Tons of information there today. Go ahead and print it all out, too, by the way, and give copies to your friends. Kidding, the video. We're watching the video on Bob's screen. It's like the only thing scarier than the words is the video. Yowza.
The crazy world of Arthur Brown.
Well, heavy on the crazy there. But it was appropriate,
insane,
nonetheless. All right, so let's see. You also are the science chair on the board of directors for the Wildfire Institute.
Correct.
Do tell.
What we do is we review policy coming out of the Forest Service and other land management agencies and write appropriate reviews back to the agency. And then, you know, I feed that forward to my congressman's office.
Good thinking.
You know. And what we're about is not thinking that we'd ever eliminate fire from the forest, but we're looking for to get a balance of reasonable management back in the forest to offset the catastrophic loss that we're seeing. That's uncharacteristic from looking back through history at the fire behavior we're seeing.
Because everything we're seeing now is super reactionary.
Yeah,
I mean, none of this is actually, you know, but it is kind of interesting. I don't have it at my fingertips, but there was a letter written by a guy, Payne Ranch, in January of last year, and he had said if they don't do something on the land on this 13,000 acres, I believe, they will have this, and as the end result, and absolutely everything on his list happened.
Yeah, so what we have is, you know, in on our board that work on this, we have some, you know, members in Washington State, Oregon, and California. Some are past Forest Service employees from the chief's office. Some are regional directors of fire and aviation for the agency. We have currently a Type 1 incident commander works with us, and then a kind of a Northern California leader in fire safe councils. So we look at it from different perspectives. My role is to interpret the fire behavior and the science and the forest science pieces associated with either forest productivity, wildlife habitat, other issues that may arise, water, and those kinds of things.
Are they really listening? I mean, is
They listen.
You do real science, and then you hand it off, and then does it circular file, or do they just run up against a brick wall when they try to do it?
We have some luck. I mean, we you know, sometimes it causes the agency to relook at things. We saw that with kind of a rebuttal of the chief's fire policy a year ago in about a 5-page brief that we wrote back to the agency at that, and then they did some revision associated with that.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Okay, so how do we reach the maybe the not crazy environmental thing, the people who just don't get it because they just don't have the information, besides putting out information like this?
You know, I really struggle with that. What we're trying to do is most of our board members are my age, and we're trying to find someone who's good at Facebook and some of the other more social media to do a better outreach. And truthfully, you know, most people just aren't engaged in this until they visit their favorite place on a national forest and there's no longer trees.
And there's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
They get there and go, wow, when did this happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just for folks to understand this this program, actually, if you go to the website at wethepeopleradio.us, you have a Twitter link, you have a Facebook link, you have every other link you could possibly think of. It's got stuff I actually don't even mess with. But whatever link you'd like, send the show out. You know, ask people, engage them.
Yeah.
What do they think about it? You can email it. If they don't want to listen, there's plenty on the page to read.
Yeah, this is really important.
It affects
our lives. It affects our health.
And it's not going away.
Yeah.
It's not going away.
Yeah.
We appreciate your
expertise. Ray, thanks for coming on again. We appreciate it.
And we appreciate you coming all the way down here.
Lots of information.
No, thanks.
Tons more fun when you're actually here.
Thanks for having me.
Bob, thanks for all the cool music.
For those of you in Philadelphia, it's like driving down here from New York City.
That's true. We should give some frame of reference. We're not next door, but we have no traffic, so.
Yeah.
It's a nice drive.
I don't have to take the train.
Exactly. There's that, too. All right. We'll see you guys next week. Another great episode of We the People. Thanks for joining us. Join us online anytime, wethepeopleradio.us.